People who face the visitors report fierce little figures with eyes that seem to stare into the deepest core of being. And those eyes are asking for something, perhaps even demanding it. It seems to me that it seeks the very depth of the soul. It seeks communion. That was a passage from the Whitley Strieber book, Communion. On the line from his radio studio in Southern California, we have Whitley Strieber. He has a new book out. On August 22nd, it will be released. It's called The Grays. As we open up this half hour, we'll continue talking to Whitley about his experiences with the Grays. In fact, Farah, I think you have a question for Whitley.
Yes. Though you have been having all these very intense experiences for a long time, and I know that sometime the female gray told you something. She said that you are the luckiest of the lucky. So do you feel yourself as the luckiest of the lucky?
I have been placed in a position of horrifying and agonizing responsibility, possessing what I believe to be among the most valuable things that any human being has ever possessed, and needing to communicate it to my species, which in turn needs it desperately and is turned away and will not listen. This should be being broadcast all over the world, and instead only a few of us have the intelligence and the courage and the insight to actually listen to this. And the openness of mind. Most of us, it doesn't matter. And the whole great machine of mankind goes rolling off toward the cliff that it is so quickly approaching. And if I'm lucky to be in that position, then yes, I am the luckiest of all.
Okay. And the other thing, in all these communications or in all these interactions with them, did they ever tell you their real origin? Did they ever tell you that they are extraterrestrials? They are coming from another planet?
No, I have no idea what they are. Not the faintest.
So, did you ever ask?
I tried. I got certain communications from time to time, yes.
But the answer is?
I don't think it's even a relevant question. I don't think it matters, and I don't think it's something that we can usefully answer in any case.
Okay.
I can tell you this. I doubt very much that they're from another planet. And in any way that we can really that's really meaningful to us. This universe is a living being, and it's incredibly complex, and what they are and where they may be from is still very much of a mystery.
Yes.
I'll tell you one thing about this. And it's reflected in the book, and that is that very often, and this is something that the MUFON types hate, people will report that they see their dead friends and relatives in the context of close encounter experiences with the Greys, as I did. And so that just is an inkling of how very different.
Yes.
The answer to the question where they are, where they may be from, may be from what we expect.
Yes. And also, as far as I can understand from your books, you really had a very, very intense bond, a very intense relationship with the female gray.
Yes, I did. And
so it was, yes, and on the spiritual level, on the soul level, emotionally, physically, because...
Physically too, yes.
You got closer physically, but also emotionally. Was it a kind of a love story or something?
She wasn't a gray like the little grays that seemed to be the main ones. They were very ephemeral. She was a solid person. And when you were close to her, I had the impression, at least, that I was with a human being who was somehow mutated.
Okay, okay.
Perhaps even a person from the distant future.
Okay.
There was a sense of the human about her that certainly wasn't present when I met the little grays in the forest at all.
Mm-hmm. because it makes me feel that, it makes me think that you had a very spiritual, romantic, emotional bond with that female being.
I'm not sure that the word romantic fits in there. I had, in the sense that I was never aware of any volition on my part. In other words, when I had meetings with her, they were things I had to, that I was compelled to do. There were actions that I took that I couldn't do anything else. That just seemed to unfold. And so, you know, my wife and I were, I was very concerned when this was happening because of my I have a wife and I'm married. I've taken a vow.
Excuse me, but I know that you have a wonderful wife.
Yeah.
You have a wonderful marriage and a son. I was going to ask you, what happened in your marriage when you started to experience these encounters with the beings? Was there any influences?
Well, when it first started, I did not know anything about it, and therefore I thought I was losing my mind. And at the time in New York, as I understood the law, if I had been committed, had to be committed, my wife wouldn't have been able to divorce me. She would have been stuck until I was mentally well again, if I ever was. And I thought I was becoming psychotic, frankly, and so I kept trying to break our marriage up right at first. Before understand was never so real, so relieved in her life than when I told her I thought I might have had an encounter with aliens, because at least it began to make sense of it all. After it became more overt in December of 85, I started going to the doctor because I figured at that point it was obviously some kind of organic difficulty. I figured it was a brain tumor in my temporal lobe or temporal lobe epilepsy or something like that. I did not think of it as being anymore just being a psychotic thing. So the stress on our marriage became less in a certain sense then. And I certainly, the last thing I wanted then was to break up with Anne because I really desperately wanted her in my life, and I loved her very much through the whole thing. Then when the woman came in, which was about a year later, she began to show up. The first indication that I had that she was around came from one of the editors at William Morrow & Company. Right after the book was published, he went into a bookstore in Manhattan, and he encountered her and her husband, he had a face-to-face encounter with them in this bookstore where they made it clear that they thought that the book was all wrong, and which, of course, she would do. I mean, if you met her for 5 seconds, you'd know exactly why she would think that was, A, funny, and, B, why it would probably be true, and, C, why she would want me to be in that state of unsureness. She's very interested in the growth of consciousness and a real master at it, and you don't grow in consciousness by having fun. You grow in consciousness by having questions that you can neither bear nor answer. Anyway, that was the first time I knew that she was somehow physically real. And then more real physically even than I had thought. And then there came some meetings from time to time, one in an apartment in Manhattan where it was a very sexually intense experience for me, and one that I had no volition over. I couldn't change. And it was at that time that I thought that they were human beings that were mutated, that they were people, and maybe part gray or God only knows something that they've invented. I just don't know, but I do know this, that she is a brilliant and immensely difficult person, and someone very, very well worth knowing and having a relationship, and I miss her. I wish I would see her again, frankly, from time to time, but that's not to be. So,
do you think that are there any fruits of this relationship as kids?
Well, it's a good question. I think there must be, because why? She's much too practical. I mean, it wasn't just for fun.
Was this a project?
It happened once in this apartment. It happened again at our cabin. And when it was happened at our cabin, I woke up in the middle of the act, lying on my back with this person sitting on me. And the room was filled with people. The little man who was the guardian who stayed in the woods behind our house was there. And her husband was there, looking very much like her. And three military people were there, and they were all very disturbed, and they looked like they were, everyone was, except her, was looking like, you know, she was really lowering herself to do what she was doing.
Okay.
And
Well, Whitley, what was her attitude about it? She didn't appear to, she was lowering herself.
I couldn't see her face. Her face was blacked out, but the rest of her body was visible. And let's just say that she was functioning in a very energetic manner. I didn't have any impression that she was having any difficulty.
So do you think that all this relationship was a part of a scientific experiment or a project, including you and her?
No, not at all. A project, yes, but I don't think any scientific experiment, no.
Did you put something like this in the book, the fiction, the novel?
Yeah, there is stuff like this in the book.
Yeah, I mean, but the roles would be reversed since I guess you have a heroine instead of a hero, is that right?
Well, the book is fairly complicated in that respect.
Uh-huh.
The hero of the book is really a little boy, and he doesn't get involved in any sex activities, of course. But the female protagonist, I should say, who is the empath who works for the government, has a very different and much more complex situation. She doesn't get involved in any overt sex with the Greys, no. But she does get into a very ambiguous and difficult relationship where she realizes the overwhelming importance of what she's dealing with, but doesn't understand and has a lot of trouble making her way. Until one of the blondes is involved and gives her some direction. And this was another factor in my experience, in that the blondes came from time to time, and I met one of them whose existence was revealed, I guess, for the first time in the Greys, and I got to know him quite well, and he was adamantly opposed to the Greys. He just thought they were the most dangerous thing in the universe. But he would do that because the creating of friction is very important. One of the Greys told Phil Corso, or communicated to Phil Corso, that what was on offer to us was a new world if we could take it. And that means two things. Everything that is communicated, especially when they communicate with words that come into the middle of your head, has more than one meaning. In fact, you have to understand that the words are just there as symbols, that the larger communication has all possible meanings that those words may contain and more. So a new world, if you can take it, means that we have to wrest it from their hands by proving that we are strong enough to do so, and also that we have to bear it because it is going to lead us into our own truth, and that is going to be really hard. But the blonde who communicated with me about the danger of the Greys was really saying that we must approach them with open eyes because they're the name of the game. They're who we're going to have to relate to in order to go forward. Nobody else is going to help us because there's nobody else who's tough enough, strong enough, or willing.
Whitley, what do you think about the alien implants? Did you have, or do you have an implant?
Well, I've got one in my ear, and I can't get rid of it, or I won't try again. But what do I think about them? Well, I think this. Maybe I have learned to use the one that I have, or maybe its presence and my attempts to use it have led me to another level of mind than I was at before. And the way I can use it is this. I can actually see, and vividly see, other worlds, I guess, in this universe. But I can go to them sometimes and see people moving about, and the closer they are to human form, the easier they are for me to make out. The farther away they are, the harder. and sometimes they're so far away from human form I might see a place with a city in it and be able to move through all kinds of architecture and just have a wonderful experience and never see a living soul. And the reason I've discovered is that they're so different from us. The more different they are, the less information my mind has to put together and the less able I am to see them. But this is an extraordinary and phenomenal gift. I've used it in many different ways. I was able to find a world that was a little worse off than ours and one that was a little better off than ours and see why in both cases. And I learned a great deal from that, and that's all reflected in the book. I learned a great deal from it.
So can we say that you had out-of-body experiences? Is this a kind of astral travel?
No, it's more like television. I'm in my body when it happens. I've had some that were so intense that it wasn't even like being in an out-of-body. It was like being physically.
Physically, okay.
I have had lots of out-of-body experiences, though. I had one particularly fine one that was so vivid and so real. And I thought to myself, oh, hey, I've learned how to do this. This is going to really be cool. I've never been able to do it again. But I do know that it exists, certainly.
And talking about the physical changes, did you ever have any physical changes in the health-wise, positive or negative effects, after you started to communicate with them, after the interactions? I mean, did they affect your health?
Yeah, the first problem was allergies. I had a tremendous upsurge in allergies, and they started helping me by giving me visualizations of things I shouldn't eat, because when you're in close contact with them, the histamine, physical contact, histamine situation gets out of hand. When I used to have people to my cabin to come and see them and meet with them, and that happened a lot, I would warn people, I said, do not touch them, because if you touch them, you're going to have a big histamine reaction. And I was afraid someone would get sick, you know, get anaphylactic shock. And I had epinephrine injectors in the house in case that happened to me or somebody else. And this one woman, Raven Dana, when one of them showed up in her room, and here she was a person who was very at ease with all of this, and then the gray shows up in her room, and first she thinks it's a raccoon, like a raccoon would come into the house in the middle of the night. And then she proceeds to put her hand out, and of course it reaches out and touches her hand, because the little grays, the real, totally gray grays, are very, when they're close to you, if they've been willing to come close to you physically, it means they really like and trust you, because they'll put you in an altered state otherwise, because they're very fragile. And so she touches his hand, and she proceeds to have a big reaction. By the next afternoon, she's just like swollen closed. I thought we were going to have to take her to the hospital. And what was I going to say to him? Oh, she touched an alien, and she's having an allergic reaction? That wasn't going to go over.
Yes. And
so, fortunately, it went away. But yeah, there's a lot of this physically.
Whitley, anything like that ever happened to you? Have you touched?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And that was why that
you knew by experience that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I was warning people, and I had to go to the doctor, and I took because they explained to me that what it was doing was raising my overall histamine level, and when I say explained, I'm using our language. They showed me. Would be the best way to put it. They demonstrated it in a certain way, which will become clearer, I hope, when you read the book. But anyway, that because the overall histamine level was rising, underlying allergies were liable to be triggered to innocent things, like mainly chocolate was the one they were most worried about. So I finally went to an allergist, and he said, yeah, you know, you do have an allergy to chocolate, actually. And he found a number of things I was allergic to and gave me injections to take home and take, and I took injections every day for years while I was, for the whole time, in fact, that I was dealing with the grays. Then I eventually moved to Texas and went off the injections. And soon enough, I thought that the grays would not show up there, and they did show up a couple of times. And the first time they showed up, what they did was they had their own allergy thing. And they stuck this thing in my little, it was just a little flat thing with a little tiny prick needle, like a smallpox needle on one side, when they pushed this into my arm, and I proceeded to lose all sensation in my skin. It was gone. Phenomenally weird. But I was with her in her being, and it was the lady from communion, and in her real being. And I don't know how to explain this to you, but it takes you into a way of perceiving the world that's different from ours. And so the same world, but just looks very different. And it sounds different, and it feels different, and you feel like you are a gray, and you're part of them in a certain way. And then in the next morning, I wake up, and I'm still numb. So I didn't realize anything was wrong. I had had this contact with her. I was wide awake when it happened. I went and took my shower, and the water starts hitting me, and it sounded, I could hear it, and it was sort of thumping inside my body a little bit, but I realized I have no sensation at all in my skin. So I figured, well, hopefully this will come back, otherwise I'm just going to have to live like this. I dry myself off, and it's a very weird experience. I go out, and I turn on the radio. I can't understand the English language. It's just gibberish.
Hmm.
So I sit there and I listen and I concentrate on the radio and I feel like I've been a million miles away for years, frankly, is how it felt. And gradually I get it back again. Then we try to go to Mass, to church, and get in the car. I can't drive a foot. I mean, I'm so confused. We end up at the end of a runway at the airport. I'm just totally disoriented. I'm driving at random almost. I mean, we weren't on the runway. We were on a little access road that I don't know how the hell I got onto. But that's what it's like. So, yeah, there were physical effects is the answer, the long answer.
This is very scary. This is very scary. And I was also wanted to ask you, except the allergic reactions and the other scary things, how does it feel when they touch you or when you touch them? How does it feel, their skin? Is it soft or humid or dry?
I'm not so sure I can answer that because I haven't been touched much. At the first night, I recall it feeling like deer skin, and they had also the little blue guys were there, these little blue frog-like people who seemed to be somehow connected to and part of the grays. They had gloves on that were sort of soft, too. I've not been much touched. I will say this, though. One of them jumped on my back one time.
Mm-hmm.
And now this was one that was more in the human form, not like the little grays. This was one that was about 4 feet tall, like the lady on the cover of Communion, but different.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like iron. She's real thin legs and arms, but you couldn't even think about it. Getting her off. It was him or it. I don't even know what it was. It was like being in an iron vice.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing strength. Like she was made of steel.
Yes. Yes. Do they have their names? Do they have the concept of name?
No. They do have identities, but I don't think there are any names. It's not like us in that respect. The identity is the way I would identify them by the way they made me feel when I was near them.
Okay.
When we come back, we want to talk to Whitley Strieber some more about abductions and one of Farrah's favorite subjects, vampires. Hold on, Whitley. We'll be back with you right after this word, and naturally, we want to mention that your new novel, The Grays, will be coming out on August 22nd. As we continue with more of Meet the Icon, Whitley Strieber, stand by.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. Uniquely authored from beyond the grave and co-authored in this world, the book chronicles the miraculous journey of communication beyond death. Learn more about the book, My Search for the Afterlife. Visit their website at www.mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.